In my episode, Are All Landlords Bastards?, you will have met Greg Suman. Greg is the lettings director at a chain of estate agents. He's also the president-elect of the Association of Residential Letting Agents, and he happens to personally be a landlord of free properties. As you can imagine, we didn't agree on very much, and I left it pretty open-ended at the end of the show whether all landlords were bastards. He was very accommodating, though. I didn't want to just leave it there, though, because we had a really broad conversation, which we didn't have time to fit into that episode. And I'm putting out all of it, or pretty much all of it, unedited here. And that's because I think precisely because we disagreed so fundamentally, me and Greg actually got down to some of the fundamentals of landlordism. In particular, you know, the philosophy of the ethics of charging someone rent to pay your mortgage. So in the next half hour, you'll hear us arguing over whether landlords play a useful role in society, whether people on principle should be able to do whatever they want with their property, and we even got onto whether landlords should exist. As I say, we didn't agree on much, but it always remained civil. I'm very grateful for Greg's time. Now, some housekeeping. This full conversation is available only to Patreon supporters of Crash Course. If you're listening on the free feed and want to hear the whole thing, please go to patreon.com/crashcoursepod. That's patreon.com/crashcoursepod. If you are already a Patreon supporter, thank you so much. You're what makes this all possible. We really, really do appreciate it. Let's dive straight into the debate. To avoid repetition, I've left out the bulk of the answers you will have already heard on the last episode. And that means we join the conversation with Greg explaining why he thinks abolishing no-fault evictions would be a bad idea.
I suppose I need to clarify that the term bad tenant is a very subjective one. Yes, quite right. A bad tenant for one landlord could be a great tenant for another. But equally, we need to understand that these are private landlords who are investing their personal savings into providing a home to somebody else. They don't have to do it. And if they stop doing that, we have to understand what will happen if they stop providing that accommodation. Now, we've got about 11 million people in the private rented sector. We are already witnessing rents going up. It's a direct result of landlords leaving. And yes, whilst we can argue that landlords should have even more duty of care to tenants, the reality is simply that they will vote with their feet and they will leave the private rented sector.
And this, I think, is where we potentially have another philosophical disagreement, let's say, because you're talking about landlords needing this incentive to invest in the private rental market. And to give them that incentive, you need to give them, I suppose, lots of freedoms to do with that property what they want to do. Can they kick out tenants if, you know, they want to change the use of the property or if they want different tenants? That's the kind of reassurance they need to make this investment. Now, I suppose the problem for me with talking about it like that is a landlord's investment tends to be a building which already exists, which was already perfectly capable of housing someone. And so that investment hasn't, you know, in the way that a car company might invest in new cars and that would create new cars, when a buy-to-let landlord or any kind of landlord invests in property, you know, there's a very small sector of the market which is investing in new housing, and so new housing is being built. But the majority of people are, I suppose, competing with first-time buyers, buying up a house and then renting it out to someone and sort of expecting someone else to pay their mortgage. So it doesn't seem to me that that investment is particularly socially useful, let's say.
It's a really interesting point, and only today I've come across some research conducted by Leeds Building Society. They found that, and this is research from October, so they found that due to the cost of living crisis, 89% of first-time buyers, that's 9 in 10, have decided to delay their purchase by 6 or more months. Now, the average expected delay is now 18 months. So those first-time buyers are currently tenants. For reasons outside of their control, they've chosen not to buy. So therefore, if they're not buying and they will be competing with the other tenants, the other 11 million tenants who are already struggling to secure a home over their heads, a roof over their heads, what do you think will happen with prices? What do you think will happen with rents? And is it really fair to hold landlords responsible for the lack of house building?
I don't think it's fair to hold landlords responsible for the lack of house building. I suppose what I'm saying is I don't necessarily think we need to reward them for their investment. And the example you've used there of first-time buyers putting off buying a new home because of, you know, uncertain conditions. Now, one of the reasons someone might want to put off a home, or one of the reasons why interest rates increasing at the moment are causing such uncertainty, is because the price of property has been massively pushed up over the past few decades. And the reason it's been massively pushed up is because, well, for one reason, I think one in five purchases is for a buy-to-let mortgage. So that's a huge amount of demand into the market from people who want to be landlords. And so landlords have helped to push up the price of housing. So potentially, if you hadn't got all these buy-to-let landlords, houses wouldn't be quite as expensive and people wouldn't have to wait 18 months to get a mortgage. I mean, how would you respond to that?
Quick question, Michael. It's the argument I've heard before made by George Osborne in 2015. The argument was that if we level the playing field between those buying to live in and those buying as an investment, it will be easier for first-time buyers to get onto the ladder. Well, that argument is completely flawed, and our experience has proved that. Rents have skyrocketed, and landlords are exiting the market, which is just exacerbating the problem. And first-time buyers are delaying their purchases. So even though the interest rates were at an all-time low, we were virtually in a decade of zero interest rates, that plan didn't work. So you know what they say? If you go through the same motions expecting a different result, you are not very smart, let's put it that way. And I feel like we're about to step on the same rake again and it's going to hit us in the forehead. So currently, we have a situation where a landlord is expected to invest a significant... Actually, Michael, let me give you a case study. A property, a two-bedroom property in London costs about £600,000. In order for a buy-to-let investor to buy that, they need to come up with about £150,000 as a deposit. In addition to that, they have to pay stamp duty. And after they've purchased it, they have to pay income tax on the rent rather than the profit that they make of it. So I've got a landlord I've spoken to who was paying 1.19% interest, and his payments were £446 per month. He was getting £1,750 per month in rent, which was an amazing profit. Now, he still hasn't got his £150,000 back. Now, on that, he has to pay tax at £700. And at the end of the exercise, the post-tax profit after he deducts his service charges, and that's assuming that there is no maintenance needed and he's done it himself, there are no estate agent's fees, his profit is £594 a month, having invested £150,000, not including stamp duty. He now needs to remortgage, and the best mortgage rate he can get is 6%. All of a sudden, his mortgage payments have jumped to £2,250, whilst the rent remains £1,750. He cannot increase the rent because the tenant wouldn't be able to afford it. All of a sudden, before he has to pay tax, he's lost £700 in tax. And after that, you can see that he's made a loss of £850 every month. Now, what would you expect that landlord to do now?
Well, I don't know what I'd expect him to do. That's a sort of sociological question. What do I expect him to do? Now, I think we are sort of having a conversation in a way about what's fair, let's say. What's fair? What's reasonable? What is a sort of productive role to play in society? And you mentioned that, you know, this still hasn't paid off his £150,000. Now, personally, when landlords talk about profits and losses, they say, oh, I'm only, you know, the rent is only a few hundred pounds more than my mortgage repayments. I'm not rinsing this property for money. I'm not exploiting these tenants because I'm not making a massive profit. Well, you might not be making a massive month-to-month profit, but at the end of this whole process, you've got someone else to pay for your mortgage. And at the end of this whole, you know, rigmarole, where someone has been paying 50% of their earnings to you every month, you have a very valuable asset. You're sitting on a big asset. So I don't really see why landlords expect to both make a month-to-month profit and acquire a very valuable asset at the end of it. It seems like they want their cake and to eat it. You'll say, I want someone else to pay my mortgage and I want them to pay above and beyond that as well. Now, to me, that doesn't seem particularly fair. That's not a fair relationship. And that's why I'm, you know, very frustrated as a renter, because I feel like I'm giving so much of my earnings to someone to buy them a flat.
That was the first part of my debate with Greg Suman. To hear the rest, you can sign up as a Patreon supporter for as little as £3 a month. It means you get to listen to all the episodes, and also you help support the podcast and help us grow. To do that, go to patreon.com/crashcoursepod. That's patreon.com/crashcoursepod, and you'll get a link to the Patreon only feed. For now, Crash Course is hosted by me, Michael Walker. Production and editing is by Lewis Bassett and Patrick Herdman. Patrick Herdman does the sound design.